This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
16 till 10. Quickly to Brian Taylor, director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs at the Maxwell School at Syracuse University. Most recent book, Russia Politics, a very short introduction. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm well, thank you.
I'm going to tell you what. The other day when they had the meeting Friday, I think it was, we were all concerned with Mardi Gras in the Oval Office with Vladimir Zelensky and President Trump. First thing I thought was, well, you don't see that every day. Then the second thought I had was, a lot of people are going to view this in a negative manner. It would not be the way diplomacy is normally conducted, but I don't know. Is it a terrible thing or not? Because honestly, I've never been involved in a diplomatic discussion. I'm willing to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. I'm not trying to bash anybody here. Your thoughts on what happened in the Oval Office and where do we stand today, the United States' relationship with Russia?
It was certainly a surprising meeting. And like you, I can't remember seeing a meeting quite like that. From my perspective, as someone who thinks that if we go back to first principles, this war, the largest war in Europe since World War II, was started by Russia. Mm. All of us watched it on TV as Russian tanks crossed the border, as Russian missiles slammed into Ukrainian cities. And so we need to start from that point of view, even though President Trump has said recently that Ukraine is somehow responsible for the war starting. That's not true.
Yeah, let me take a step back for a second, yeah, if I can, Brian,
sure,
just to be clear, because, you know, the truth can be a complicated thing. Did he have a chance to prevent this, or Zelensky, or what would he have had to have done to prevent Russia from invading? Because it seems as though it's being positioned as Zelensky could have avoided this, but what would he have had to give up? Tell me about this.
Well, it's true that a country can always prevent an invasion by surrendering in advance. That was basically the option on the table for Zelensky, and the Ukrainian people and the Ukrainian government chose to stand and fight. I mean, we know that what Putin has wanted from Ukraine is very far-reaching. He's been very clear about this. He wants a Ukrainian government that is under Russian control. He has said repeatedly that Ukrainians and Russians are one people. He thinks the creation of Ukraine in the beginning of the 20th century as part of the Soviet Union was a mistake. And he says that, you know, this is historically Russian land. So, first of all, those things aren't true. But second of all, if you're the president of Ukraine or the government of Ukraine, that's not really an acceptable basis for starting discussions about avoiding a war. I mean, so I think we need to be clear about what Russia's aims are. It's not really about just this or that village or this or that city that they're trying to conquer. It's they want control over Ukraine, and Ukraine wants to be sovereign and independent and choose its own government with its own people. So the goals are very far apart, right? I don't see anywhere of squaring that circle, which is why Russia ended up invading. But to continue on U.S. Mm-hmm. policy, I mean, since that meeting in the Oval Office, the Trump administration has said that it's stopping U.S. military assistance to Ukraine, including money that Congress voted for and that was signed into legislation. So the president doesn't have the power to unilaterally impound funding that's already been supported. And then yesterday it was announced that we're stopping sharing intelligence with Ukrainians, which, of course, will make it harder for them on the battlefield. And then just today it was announced that the U.S. is looking at plans to deport 240,000 Ukrainian refugees who fled to the U.S. after the full-scale invasion. So we're seeing a major pivot in U.S. policy from one that was supporting Ukraine to one that seems to be more friendly, quite frankly, to the Russian position, because I haven't heard a lot out of the U.S. government from President Trump on down on what Putin should have to give up and whether Putin bears some responsibility for the war. So we're in a very different position. And honestly, my head is spinning a bit about the change in U.S. policy with respect to the Russia-Ukraine war.
Well, what does this say to our allies, and how important is it? You know, because a lot of people think the United States is the cornerstone of the world, and that we feed the world, supply the world with this, that, the other thing. We don't need anybody else. Just talk about that, if you will, Professor, in a whole worldwide focus of geopolitics.
Sure. So obviously the United States is the most powerful country in the world. It has the largest economy. It has the most powerful military. We are separated from both Asia and Europe with very large oceans on both sides. So in that sense, we're quite secure. But it has been U.S. policy going back at least since the end of the World War II, if not before, that U.S. security in some sense depends on what happens elsewhere around the world. And we ended up getting involved in both the First World War and the Second World War because we saw what was happening there as endangering our security. And I think the policy of creating NATO to protect European security, the U.S. and Europe working together to make sure Europe doesn't fall under Soviet control, you know, in the post-World War II period, was a very successful strategy, you know, over 75 years of the NATO alliance. And the one time NATO had to answer the call of collective defense was when the U.S. was attacked on 9/11 and our allies sent troops to fight in Afghanistan. So I think it's been a good thing for the United States to be engaged in the world and have allies around the world, which helps the world economy, and it helps American citizens ultimately having peace and security around the world. And when that's endangered, it endangers our livelihood and our security.
Everything has unintended consequences or intended consequences. I saw somebody opine over the weekend, I forget where it was because I watched so many things, that this could lead to a new nuclear arms race where other countries are thinking, okay, to use a golf term when it comes to the game of wolf, that the United States is squirting other countries going it alone. And if that's the case, then they're going to be on their own. And if that's the case, that could lead to a new buildup of nuclear weapons. Thoughts on that?
I think that's exactly right, actually. And when I say exactly right, I'm not predicting that other countries are going to run out and get nuclear weapons, but it certainly changes their incentives. Our allies, not only in Europe, but also countries like Japan and South Korea, have depended upon U.S. defense commitments. If those are going away, then they would quite reasonably ask the question, well, maybe we should get nuclear weapons to protect ourselves. And we hear countries in Europe, such as Poland and Germany, at least starting conversations about this. The French President Emmanuel Macron said yesterday that France will have to think about whether it wants to extend its nuclear arsenal to cover other countries in Europe. So if the U.S. is withdrawing from its allied commitments, then certainly countries that have depended in part on the U.S. to help provide for our security and their security will start thinking about what they need to do independent of the U.S. if the U.S. can't be counted on. And certainly the risk of nuclear proliferation will increase if the U.S. withdraws from its current security commitments.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate your time and your insights as always. You have to come back. We have more time. Director of the Moynihan Institute of Global Affairs at the Maxwell School at Syracuse University. His most recent book is Russia Politics, a very short introduction. Germany, as it stands now, does not have nuclear weapons. It does host them as a part of a NATO agreement. And I just got to go back to Norm Macdonald, who said Germany's a relatively small country in the middle of Europe that took on the world twice and almost won. We'll be back. WWL.